Welcome to Nightchild Talks Prince, uncut and unscripted.
Wow. So, how do you want to? How do you want to begin? I think instead of me introducing you, it's probably better if you, I don't know, introduce yourself, because I always find it weird when people, you know, when people like sort of introduce someone, you're thinking it's kind of weird because someone else is like speaking for you. So it's like kind of odd. But I mean, in terms of like, who are you? I should start off, who are you to all the listeners, all five of them?
My name is Vicky. I'm a creative writer. I thought that I'd made the transition from music to pure writing, and then 3 days later I started working on a new song, so there's still some music going on. Major Prince fan, have been since I was 13. I'm now 24, so like, wow. 11 years this year. You can look at me as a person, my name, the fact I don't eat meat, the fact I never leave the house without heeled boots. I can attribute all of that to Prince. And I would say that he is my greatest musical inspiration. I would say greatest inspiration overall, but Peter Capaldi exists. So.
I find it quite interesting because the video I saw recently on TikTok, and I was just blown away because it was really emotional, and you talked about Third Eye Girl and that connection, and that really interests me because we often got it in the Prince community. Oh wow, the album's there. See, it just is amazing because we often think of the Prince community kind of like, ah, younger people get into Prince, how they're discovering him, and it's quite interesting. So for you, Third Eye Girl was like, was that your gateway into Prince or?
No, my gateway was Batman. I made
no way, me too. No way.
Really?
No way. Wow. Go on, sorry. Yeah.
I made another TikTok recently reviewing the Gotham Knights game, and I said in it that Batman changed my life. And in a way, it kind of did, because I'm a product of Prince because of Batman. And it was like summer 2013, and I put on the extended version of the Party Man music video. Aww. And at the time I was Michael Jackson fan, Psy fan, which is the Gangnam Style K-pop guy, different story. Then I put on Party Man and I was like, I've never heard anything like this before. And it's really long. And then, I done a little bit of research and found out that 2010 was released as a free album. And I don't know how or why, but I remember knowing that we had a copy of it knocking around the flat somewhere. So I went and listened to it, like sat, listened to it on my CD player. I was going through it and I was like, okay, this is cool. This is different. And then the track started skipping and I was like, is my CD player broken? And then the drums to Lay Down come in and I was like, this guy is unlike anything in the world. I'm going to dedicate my life to him. And then it just started rolling.
Wow. I'm so interested how, I mean, I got into Prince through Batman, and you know what? I almost thought exactly the same thing as you. He just sounded like no one else. It's like, mm-hmm. I heard that music and I was like, this is unlike anything I'd ever heard. Because I was actually a Michael Jackson fan until that point. Which is, I still listen to Michael Jackson enough, but it's kind of like, that was like the moment where I just thought, there's nothing like this. I couldn't really take it in. It was like a weird kind of new, you know, it's one of those things where you think, I want to know more. I want to find out more. And, you know, wow. So that's amazing to actually like, I love the fact that, you know, one track, because people often talk about that. They say, you know, how do people discover it? And it can just be one track that starts that journey. And wow, I mean, that's incredible. So, I mean, for you, was your favorite band? Are we saying Third Eye Girl? Oh yeah.
I remember when they were. I was 14 when they were doing the hit and run shows in London, and I remember hearing that it was happening. And I was a 14-year-old who'd never been to a concert before, and I remember going to my mum being like, "Can we go to London?" to see Prince for £10. She said no, and then I went to bed in a strop.
I mean, it was a weird time as well, because people don't understand nowadays. Sometimes people, you know, announce tours and they're like, not going to happen for like the best part of a year. And here was Prince like, oh, it's going to happen tonight or it's going to happen tomorrow. And it was just, I remember once they announced the Shepherd's Bush gig, and I literally heard the announcement. Third Eye Girl went on to, I think it was Radio 6 or Radio 4 or something. And they kind of went on and announced it. And I literally ran out the door to the train station, just ran, and then sort of got there and queued for like 6 or 7 hours. I got in the wrong queue at first, which didn't help. I queued for like the cash machine. It was so embarrassing. Like, this guy came up to me and said, are you queuing for Prince? I was like, yeah. And he said, this is the cash machine, the Prince queue. He's like, oh no, I think this is going to be embarrassing. But it was like 6 or 7 hours. And it was actually weird because I was on my own, so I couldn't leave the queue. Like, other people, they would hold people's places, or people would say, they were handing out hot chocolates and stuff. And I thought, I can't, I've got to stay in the queue. But it was just incredible. For £10, I mean...
Was that the one where they played Chaos and Disorder?
Yes, it was. Shepherd's Bush. I was near the front to the left, and it was weird because it was so loud. Oh my God, it was so loud. I mean, I was quite near the speakers, but it was just incredible to see him that close. And it was just, it's my favourite gig probably ever. Just the whole kind of crazy times. I mean, it was insane. And he just was having so much fun. And that band, it was like one of those things where I think with that band, because there's so few of them, you've really got to, be amazing, because there's nowhere to hide. You know, I mean, you're Ida or Hannah or Donna, there's nowhere to hide, because, there's a lot of you, a lot of work to do, but only you to do it. And you have to be, the best. You have to be incredible, really.
It's thinking back to like the staging of like the Crazy to Cool show or the video of the London show. It is literally just an empty stage with Prince in the middle, Donna one side, Ida the other side. There was like nowhere to hide. The only person that I've seen hiding is Damaris Lewis when she'd run off and run back on to dance.
<Yes. laughs> I'd get that. Or occasionally get Joshua would pop on. He came on at the end, I think, of the gig, and like just sort of came off a little bit, and sort of, I can't remember what he did. I think he had like a cowbell or a tambourine or something, and like it was kind of like he just jumped on at the end. But it was just incredible to see them. And I think, obviously you've recently seen Ida, and she's always just, I don't know, she's always seemed like it's just an incredibly nice, and I know people say this a lot, and they will say, someone's really humble or whatever, but she really struck me as someone who just, she's not like you expect sort of famous people to be. She's just like really kind of down to earth and friendly. And how was the gig recently in London?
Incredible. That woman can play. Like, seeing it on video on record is one thing, but then being in the room and doing the thing so fast and like popping, whatever it's called, mind-blowing. But she was at the merch stand afterwards and she was signing stuff with the guitarist, I want to say, and my mum commended her, saying, oh, it's really nice of her to go to the merch stand afterwards. And I think playing with Prince is incredible, and I don't think I can name names, but I think being in Prince's shadow can kind of give you an ego boost, and you can swan around being like, I played with Prince for X amount of years.
Yeah,
that could be like your whole entire career personality. Whereas with Ida, she's gone off, done her own thing, released God knows how many albums with and without MPG members, but there is absolutely no like looking down her nose, chin up snobbiness about her. She's always smiling whenever she's playing, like the Crazy to Cool video, always smiling whilst playing. And there was someone else I was gonna say. She's incredibly hilarious. She made us laugh so much.
I think as the thing I love about her is she's just like I say, there's that thing that she's incredibly hardworking. I mean, she's always, on tour, she's always playing somewhere, and she just doesn't stop. But like you say, she, you know, it, being at the merch stand and she's really open and friendly with people. And you got a hug, didn't you?
I didn't get a hug. I didn't get a photo. So people are going to have to believe me. But, like, I have two signed albums. What more proof do you want?
Oh, I think that's just such an incredible, and it's brilliant, because I think it's one of those eras I hope gets appreciated more, because I don't hear it talked about enough as it should be, because I think that was, you know, one of my favorite eras. It was almost like Prince talked about it sometimes on stage, almost like starting again with a new band, in terms of like almost like at the beginning of his career, because he's like, oh, we got this band, and it's almost like he was sort of like starting. Even though he's had all this career already, he talked about kind of like, you know, if we can, you know, do well and we'll carry on, we'll keep playing for you. And it was just that kind of, he had just that incredible energy. And it was mad, because what I found amazing was way back in when I first got into Prince in Batman, I went to see the new tour, and they were selling the new tour as like, oh, this is a really stripped down version. You know, this is really stripped down. And I suppose compared to Love Sexy and Sign of Times, but looking at it now, it looks like this massive, huge, elaborate production. If you compare it to like how stripped down Third Eye Girl was, you know, and it was crazy, because how he just really distilled it to that. And I was convinced after Third Eye Girl, I don't know why, I thought, well, he can't strip down the band anymore. He loves it. He'll have to go to like a big, you know, like the big NPG massive, you know, like a mantra. I thought he'd have to make it massive. And then, of course, he did the complete opposite to what I thought and just said, no, nope, just me, a piano, microphone, that's it. It just, I don't know why I kind of ever think of what Prince is going to do next, because every single time he's done something different to what I thought he was going to do, which is, you know, I suppose part of the thing. So a lot of people talk about that on TikTok, the Prince community is pretty, you know, is thriving. Have you found that, or do you find there's a lot of people on there sort of talking about Prince? Or
all I do on TikTok is talk about Doctor Who and review cans of Monster. I'm in the Prince. I'll get something come up, and it's like a minute of a performance, or like a photo collage to a song. But there's nothing really, or not, but my algorithm hasn't attuned me to the Prince community yet. I just get weird videos that I think are funny and that I want to support people.
I think it's interesting, because a lot of times nowadays it's kind of, I mean, there's this big discussion recently about, you know, Prince's music have been used in the Target ad, and some people were really for it, some people were really against it, and it was kind of like some people saying, well, how do you discover, you know, because like you say it only has to be one thing, one little song, one little moment, and it changes your life. And it's mad to think, like, say, so really basically, so you've been, it's been like a decade for you just sort of, you know, immersing yourself. Once you kind of got into Prince, where did you sort of just grab anything you could find, or did you sort of say, I'm gonna go in a certain order, or was it just like, whatever I can find, let's grab it?
When I get into people, or when something takes my fancy, I intensely research everything, and I become like an encyclopedia of that thing. And when I was getting into Prince, I was scrolling through Wikipedia, then I found the org, then I found Prince Vault, which those two were like my places.
Oh yeah.
And I managed to find a perfectly legal download of every Prince album, plus about, I want to say, around about 50, if not more, or just slightly less, bootlegs.
Wow.
And so I had his discography up until 2010, plus the two live albums that he'd put out, plus 50 bootlegs, and I was like, this is a wealth of information. Wow. What the hell am I going to do?
That's a lot to start
with. Basically just went through picking out songs, unreleased and released, that just sounds cool, grabbed my attention. Like the song Vavoom, I remember hearing when I was 13. And Dance For Me, I remember hearing when I was 13. And those are attuned to the stuff that I've got notes on to discuss, which is really weird. But I literally just intensely research, get as much of the music or whatever as possible, and then just make my way through. As at this point, in my life as a creative, I've been saying that I let my inspiration guide me as to what I do. And I guess that's kind of the same with researching and looking in. Rather than, I mean, if I've got the time to, I'll sit down and listen to an album from start to finish for the first time. But sometimes I just cherry pick. Like, I'm not the biggest Lana Del Rey fan, but I like and appreciate her. Her last album that she released, I must have heard like 5 songs off of it because the titles just sound cool. Or I'd heard a snippet on TikTok and I'm like, gotta listen to the full thing. Have I listened to the whole album? No.
I think it's quite interesting because Vavavoom was just like, anyone else, that would be a big hit. You know, I think anyone else, it would be out there and it'd be front and center. And it was just, it was so catchy. I remember when I first heard it, I just couldn't get it out of my head for quite a long time. And Dance For Me, well, I mean, Dance For Me, that kind of, you know, old school company, things like that, I just love. I just think that's just classic Prince. And it's just, you know, it's amazing because, I don't know, a lot of people who don't know Prince, you know, it's very much, oh, it's Purple Rain guy, it's this, it's that. And it's sort of, I know everyone has the kind of, you know, everyone sort of minimized sometimes, like, you know, certain things, but you think, oh, there's just so much to kind of explore. And I think it's almost, I think some people said they've been intimidated in the sense of they sort of think, well, where do you begin? Because it's a lot. And like, I like the way you took your own approach. You sort of thought, right, I'm just going to go with what, you know, attracts me, what kind of like connects with me. And I think that's actually a really good way to go, because there's no right or wrong way of, you know, approaching these things. And you know, I hate it when people, you know, like, there's been talk about people being gatekeepers and saying, oh, you know, if you just get into Prince, it can be, I mean, I was lucky because I got into Prince like pre-internet, but I think if I got into Prince now, you know, you're worried, oh, do I go online and say something? So I say, well, that's not 100%. I don't, like, to me, I don't care. I make mistakes every single day after like God knows how many years. And it's just, it's about loving that music and people, you know, that's about enjoying that music. It's meant to be a positive, uplifting, you know, thing that adds to your life. It shouldn't be like a kind of like exam of, you know, every last detail. And people go, oh, well, this person was in the studio at such and such a time. And this happened 3 days before then. And it's like, it's also having that, just that joy is supposed to make your life happier.
I remember, I think it was on The Org, which is a whole different conversation at the time.
That's a whole debate.
I remember I just discovered Same Page, Different Book for the first time when it was a Third Eye Girl single. And I had also discovered La 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 Hee Hee Hee, which is still one of my favourite songs. And I said somewhere that, oh, Same Page, Different Book is kind of like the more recent version of La 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 Hee Hee Hee. And people were just ripping me apart for that comment. Oh, and I'm just like, it's because they are both so funky.
Yeah,
it's literally just the chicken grease.
Yeah, it's the chicken grease. Exactly. That is so true, actually. It's like, I love La 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 Hee Hee because I don't think anyone else but Prince really could have done that. It's just such a mad, brilliant song. And it's just, I think sometimes, you know, when the hits came out and the B-sides came out and some of those B-sides were just, oh, just incredible. It was an incredible time to, I mean, it was a scary time because at the time we really believed that he was retiring in a sense because he said, you know, I'm retiring from, and we thought, oh my God, this is the end of Prince. He's brought out his hits collection. He's saying he's retiring and going into like multimedia projects and what's going to happen. And we thought, oh my God, this is the end of Prince. And it was, you know, just before. And he sort of changed his name. And we honestly thought that was it. And we were like, what is this? Is this really it? Is he retiring? What's he going to do? And it was just insane. And I think, you know, the B-sides, I mean, people could have built whole careers off his B-sides. They could have just, you know, well, some people have. But I mean, it just, you know, it just kind of, his B-sides would just be, I can't even, and this is what we're leaning into about, in a sense, Prince's official kind of discography is only part of it. It's only part of the whole story. I mean, the unreleased albums, the unreleased songs, and I find it fascinating because at each moment, Prince's projects, they aren't like, I'm going to sit down and record this album and start here and finish here and I'm going to make these 12 tracks. It's not usually like that. It kind of evolves and shifts. And then sometimes he goes in a completely different direction. And you think, if one thing had been different, it could have affected so many other things. I mean, you think of, you know, if the Black Album had fully come out, would that have changed things? Or if he'd have chosen to release, you know, certain projects, and you think, I don't know, Dream Factory or something like that, you think, how would each thing change the next thing? And I think, so unreleased albums is something you're kind of, no pressure there. You're going to talk to us a little bit about today.
Unreleased albums are like my, I don't know if you've heard of it. There's this thing on TikTok called like, what is your Roman Empire?
No.
apparently every man at any given point during the day will be thinking about the Roman Empire. I'm sure that's not true. And it's started a trend on TikTok of what is your Roman Empire. And every now and again, I sit and think my Roman Empire is probably unreleased music by Prince majorly, but also George Michael, because there's like three albums that are rumoured or confirmed to exist that haven't been released. Different story for a different time. But I think a good example of Prince's unreleased music is Welcome to America.
Mm.
Because I was 15 when I first heard a live recording of Welcome to America. And that, again, just kind of changed something for me. It just sounded so different, and it became like my two holy grail Prince things for the longest time were Welcome to America, the album, and the Lotus Flower movie, because Lotus Flower, NPR Sound is my favorite Prince albums. I count them as one.
It's a project. It's
Yeah, the reason why Welcome to America is a good example is because I just wanted it for so long, and then it finally came out, and I haven't bought a Prince big box set yet, like Sign of the Times or Diamonds and Pearls, because I don't have the money for that. But I managed to get the Welcome to America box set for 50 quid on Amazon. Wow. And it's the best 50 quid I've ever spent, because that album means a lot to me, and I was chasing it for so long. But then if you look at Prince's discography, there's like 49 albums. Then you go on Prince Vault to the unreleased album section, and there's about 20, 30 plus one that I've got notes on that isn't even listed on there, I don't think.
Nice.
So, and when you look at the box sets that come out, there's like three discs of unreleased music. And it's so exciting for me, because I started off with the bootlegs, so I was aware of a lot of the songs that have ended up on Diamonds and Pearls or Sign of the Times. But then you're presented with three track lists over three discs, and it's like, I know that one, I know that one, I know that one. Hang on, what the hell is that? I've never heard of that before. And for the past two box sets, I've enjoyed doing kind of like two tables of Prince songs I know that are finally out, and Prince songs that, are they even on Prince Vault? Did we know about this? And there's also every now and again just Prince songs crop up. Like recently we've had Goodbye with Tony M. Mm. And I remember the cover of If You Were a Sailboat that came out.
Mm.
And the medley of Sexy Dancer and Le Freak, and then it shifts into Housequake. And it's like, you could just be enjoying a random Saturday evening and everyone just pops off that something has leaked that nobody knew existed.
I think that's the weird thing about Prince, how there's still surprises now. And like you say, when a box set comes out, there's still things which Prince Vault, and like you say, Prince Vault is insanely detailed. I don't know how much work they put into that, but it's just crazy. And yet there's still things that come out and they go, oh, this is a new thing. Every time they discover new things. I mean, it must have been brilliant for you when they sort of officially said, Welcome to America is coming out. I mean, that must have been pretty, pretty good. You're going to be listening to you, aren't you?
I cannot remember if I was writing a quote-unquote diary at the time. Through lockdown from February 21 to September 21, I was just writing, keeping track of days and how I was feeling and that. But honestly, I remember being in a pretty weird, bad place. And then, like, days later, Welcome to America was leaked and then announced. And I was like, it felt like a gift from above being sent, and him being like, hold on, keep going. A couple more months, you finally get my album. And I'm like, okay, I'm listening to you. And then it came and it happened. And I was like,
wow.
Now I just need the Lotus Flower movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just need a few hours just wandering around the vault, just picking out a few, you know, just a few items. I mean, I think Londell should be able to arrange that for us. That should be fair. You know, it's like a Willy Wonka ticket. We can win like 3 hours in the vault and we get to like supermarket sweep. We basically go in there. We get to sort of pull out a few things. You know,
I'm kind of tempted to say to you, if you were to go into the vault, what one song would you pick?
Oh, that you're on? God.
Or album?
Oh, see, it's so difficult because I think there's bound to be. I'm actually kind of weird. I sound so really weird. This is almost cheating, but I kind of the live stuff. I think when the Glam Slam recently came out, the kind of live Blu-ray they did, and the quality of that, and I thought, is there more stuff like that? Is there more stuff in there that is just such high quality of his live performances and things like that? That's slightly cheating, but also, and this is quite weird, this is very kind of left field, but there's on the New Power Generation remixes, there's Love Left, Love Right, and there's an earlier version of that. And for some reason, when I first got into Prince, obviously I was 89, so the first Batman was just already out, so the first album I bought kind of like new was like Graffiti Bridge. Mm. And I remember because I went to the shops, I was like a teenager, and I went to the shops with my mum, and they had a choice of vinyl or cassettes. And I bought cassettes because I wanted to play it in the car. My mum was on the way home. And then she thought Morris Day was swearing. So that was an interesting moment. He wasn't, but it's like, you know, she thought, was that funking? Or I was like, yes, it's funking. And but the strange thing is, I just listened to the New Power Generation maxi single when it came out over and over and over again. I just loved that. So to hear like Love Left, Love Right, or some of those, I love those early kind of versions where you've got the song, but it is different, and you can see how he's built and modified that song and that journey and the decisions he's made. Because I think it's the thing about Prince, he usually got the absolute most out of a song. Like you see the beginning of the Alphabet Street is this kind of blues kind of really stripped down jam, and you see how he changed it, and he really got the most out of each track. So I've got to throw it back to you. So what would you grab? The Lotus Flower movie, or
I was just gonna add on to the end of what you were saying, because one of my favorite things is about Prince is having those early versions of the songs. And that has kind of influenced me, because every single version of every single song I have or make, I save in hopes that somebody, when I'm dead and gone, somebody discovers me and is like, okay, this person's pretty cool. And then they somehow get access to my vault. Sorry for saying that.
No, it's cool.
they're met with this wealth of like 3 or 4 different versions of every song, and you can see how it has been built up, what's been added, what's been changed, what's been taken away. Because bootlegs, like I think it's Blast from the Past, has those early versions. I remember hearing the early version of La 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 Hee Hee Hee, and it just felt like there was so much missing. But then what was another one that I've her Anastasia, the early version of Anastasia, where there's a section where he's directing it to Dr. Fink. I think he says, can you bear this world without me? I much prefer that version of the song, but then it feels like the deeper voice at the end of the song in the released version, where the deep voice is saying, Anastasia, come to me, talk to me, ravish me, as he's singing. I want to somehow meld those two together, because that would be my perfect version of the song. And it's kind of like a trade-off when I listen to Anastasia, which is probably my favorite song in the world, because I listen to the bootleg version and I'm like, I'm loving this. It's so different. It feels like just Prince before all of the overdubs. Then it gets to the end and the deeper voice isn't there, and I'm like, ah, that's what's missing.
I really love that process of just seeing those decisions he made. And sometimes he'd take out perhaps a slightly more personal line, or he changed something, or even when you hear Purple Rain and it's a song you know so well and it's their extra verse that he began with. And I just love that process, because often with songs nowadays, you just hear the finished product. You don't, I like the idea of, I suppose my dream would be like a video where they sort of see Prince have an idea, you know, start writing it down and just see the whole process from start to finish, and in the way that Prince did it, because Prince often worked differently, I think, to most, a lot of artists would write for months, then perhaps go into the studio for months, and then perhaps remix for months, whereas Prince often did it quite quickly and got it done. And I just love that process. Like I say, those decisions, why, I'm constantly thinking, you know, why did he change that? Why did he take that out? And seeing it grow. And you're right, sometimes it's conflicting, because you think, sometimes you listen to an earlier version, you think, oh, it's not got that, it's not got this. But then sometimes you listen to an earlier version, you think, oh, I wish you'd have kept that bit. That bit is so cool. And like, it's like discovering something you know so well. You notice every little difference, even if it's quite small, you just really notice, you know, those differences. And yeah, I think that's just, it's something we're lucky with in a sense of Prince, because he was so insanely productive. I mean, sometimes I know they talk about, is it Dwayne Tudau's book where they talk about what he does every day, and you think, I don't know how he did it all. I sort of think, how did he manage to, it's like he's five people at once.
I can't come at you with exact dates, recording studios, whatever, but I know I saw a call sheet or a worksheet from 2004, I want to say, which was the new power trio, Prince, Michael Bland and Sonny T in a recording studio. Mm. I think they cut 14 songs. And most of them went on to be like 31, 21, but also From the Lotus, Back to the Lotus, and another story for another time, because it's like a hyperfixation of mine, Lotus Flower, and like the process of 2004 to Lotus Flower being released. But they done like 14 songs in however many hours that took, with three people. It was spread across like 5 years.
It's just insane. It's one of those things where you think how he did it all. And obviously they talk about, you know, like when he was recording Parade and he just sat down and did the first four songs and just in one go. And you think, who has that kind of mental ability to go, well, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to lay the drum parts for these four songs. I'm going to lay, it's all in my head. I just need to, get it all off in one go. And it would take other musicians months to kind of work it all out, and he's like, no, this is just coming out, and the next idea comes along, and it's just, I mean, it's insane. When you, I mean, like I say, we're talking about, it's insane to look at his official released projects, then you've got his unreleased projects, then you've got songs that it's what he wrote for other people, other bands. It's just insane. So in terms of unreleased projects, where would you like to talk about that? Is there a particular unreleased project that kind of really
I have two. I have notes on two that we
excellent. Can go. Cool. Yeah. What would you like to start with?
I'll let you pick.
Oh, go on then. Go on. Wow.
So the first one is High from 2000. And the other one is, there are probably going to be purists coming at me in the comments. I see you. I hear you. Let me have some fun. The other one is Funk from 2008.
Wow. Well, we'll start off with the less controversial one, shall we? We'll start off with High, I think. Yeah. I was like, we'll ease you in. And then, I mean, wow, go for it. High. Yeah.
So basically, every Prince fan should know that you had Raven to the Joy, Fantastic, and then the Rainbow Children. And
never heard of them. Are they albums? Or...
And everybody knows that the Rainbow Children is kind of controversial. It's his most religious album. It's in my top three Prince albums, so I have a lot of love for it. But doing that research into the unreleased stuff, High kind of piqued my attention, because it sits between the commercial rave and then the religious kind of, nobody knew Prince was around until 2004 with Musicology, that era.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting to me to posit this idea of, if Prince were to release his first album as Prince with High and the tracks that are on it, how would it have gone? Would it have been a good album to quote unquote come back with, or is the Rainbow Children the right thing to do? So that's kind of why High has come to me, because it's just an interest. Like, it's like you were talking about earlier, if he were to have changed one thing, how would the rest have gone?
Yeah, because I found that one of the most interesting things about Prince is that he could do something. Sometimes he could be really try and push an album commercially, like Rave Under the Joy Fantastic, and really have, you know, guest artists and really promote it. And then he would go to the Rainbow Children, where it's very much a kind of artistic statement. And like you say, at the time, I mean, it used to drive me mad, because every time Prince released something, they go, oh, it's a comeback. It's a comeback. Every year, it's a comeback. And it was insane. And for a lot of people, between those times, until like 2004, a lot of the general public just sort of forgot where Prince was. And a lot of people just have no idea about the Rainbow Children. And like I say, I think the musicality on that is incredible. But when I look at this, and you'll talk me through it, but this album, High, I mean, oh, it's a really strong album, I think. But go on, go for it. I don't want to steal your thunder. Go for it.
Are you familiar with it? Have you got like the web page on Prince Vault in front of you?
Do you know what? Are you looking in my room? I feel seen. Yes, I have.
I can see you looking at a monitor. What else?
Some of these songs, I could talk ages, but I just love some of the songs. I think some of them are brilliant, some of them are meaningful, and some of them, it's got also one of my favourite, funniest songs on it. But yeah, I'll let you talk first, sorry.
Okay. So basically, the idea that I was going to posit to you and anyone who wants to get involved in the comments is, how would, if Prince were to have released this either instead of or before the Rainbow Children, would you have been happy with that, and how do you think it would have gone?
I think it's a really strong album. Uh-huh. I think it starts off, I mean, When I Lay My Hands on You, I think is one of my favorite tracks. I just love When I Lay My Hands on You. I think when he played it, Montreux, and whenever I hear it, and I've seen a little clip of a video, and it's only about,
a minute.
30 seconds. Yeah, it's not long. And it just cuts off and you're like, oh, I wish it was. I mean, obviously it must be out there somewhere in the vault, I guess. But When I Lay My Hands on You, I think is just an incredibly strong statement. I think this has gone down pretty well. I mean, obviously I know you've got variables about how Prince would have promoted it and various things like that. But some of these songs, I just think this is a really strong album. I love My Medallion is one of my I can't listen to that and not laugh. It's just a funny story, and it's funky as well. And it's just got this kind of, there's so many brilliant moments in it, and it's just hilarious. And it's just such a Prince track, kind of like in the vein of, I don't know, movie style or something like that. And I think having the poignant, you know, When Will We Be Paid, the kind of cover, the kind of, I think You Make My Sunshine as well with Andy Stone. Oh, I just, it's just an incredible track, a beautiful video. And I think this would have actually gone down really well. Do you think it would have? I mean, I know we've got that kind of Back to the Future thing, haven't we? If he released this, what would have been different? I mean, theoretically, if he'd have released this, everything else afterwards would have been slightly different, possibly. But I don't know. Do you think it would have been a good idea? Or do you think?
I would invite the estate to listen to what I'm about to say. Because
okay,
I feel like High is kind of in the same vein as Welcome to America, and might be able to, if at all possible, satisfy some people that isn't just me and you, because obviously most of the songs, I think all of the songs apart from one from High went on to be either the Slaughterhouse or the Rainbow, the Slaughterhouse or the Chocolate Invasion, and those are obviously just online albums. And as much as I would love to have them on official vinyl and CD, I kind of like the idea of them being just online ones. But then, because half of both albums make up this album, I feel like if they were to press it on vinyl, it would not only be a new unreleased Prince album that has artwork ready to go, thank you Steve Park, but half of both of those albums would be on there, plus the incredible cover of When Will We Be Paid. So I feel like it's now a missed opportunity that they haven't already done it, because I feel like you could satisfy having half of two albums on vinyl, but also a brand new album that most surface level Prince fans wouldn't even know about.
And it's interesting you mentioned the artwork, because that proves how kind of far this project went in terms of how close it could have been and how much was being put into it. So it was kind of clearly, you know, could have happened. And I think it's a really strong album. I mean, I know what you mean. I suppose that's the thing, I suppose, with the Slaughterhouse and Chocolate Invasion, like, how does it sit in terms of, because most, say, casual fans, certainly people who really aren't into Prince, have no idea about those albums. They don't even know they exist. And, you know, I mean, this is, would you see this as a kind of like a perfect amalgamation of those? The trouble is, I'm doing the emancipation thing. You know, when you people say, I'll pick your 12 tracks on Emancipation, and within 2 minutes, everybody's picked every song. And I feel it's like that. It's like, as soon as you sort of say, I wish you'd done Higher, but then people say, oh, but my favorite track is something else off Slaughterhouse or whatever. But it's, looking at this, I think this is stronger than both those albums individually. I'm being controversial, but I think it is. And I just think it's just incredible. I mean, I should, I'll let you do it, but if you read out the track list, I mean, oh my Lord, it's brilliant.
I feel like the estate should stick to Prince's vision. Prince had a vision. He had the artwork. He released technically three singles from it. He had another one created for High as a single, which would have had You Make My Sunshine, High, both on it in edited forms, plus Vavavoom. So he'd released singles, he had another one planned, he had the artwork, and the artwork kind of tied into the 2000 Hit and Run tour, because they both had the same picture of Prince with his guitar and no clothes on. So it feels like, it almost feels like Welcome to America in a way, in the fact that Welcome to America had this tour with that picture that went on to be the cover of the unreleased album. And there was stuff out at the time that connects to Welcome to America, but it came much later. But the track list is When I Lay My Hands on You, Super Cute, Underneath the Cream, Golden Parachute, When Will We Be Paid, The Daisy Chain, Gamilla, My Medallion, High, and You Make My Sunshine.
Wow. And I love the fact that it's also, it ties in to that. And in a sense, it's like Welcome to America. It's very, has political commentary. And I think, you know, certainly in this album, he talks a lot about the issues of record companies, and you talk about Golden Parachute, obviously, you know, political issues and When Will We Be Paid, and Daisy Chain as well. But I always remember Golden Parachute, and it was around that time that kind of like reminds you of songs like 2045, Radical Man, and that kind of like that kind of, you know, fight he was having at the time, which is interesting now looking back, because everyone now goes, oh yeah, of course, it's about record ownership, and loads of artists are saying, oh, it's really important to own their masters. And at the time, that wasn't, I mean, certainly when he first changed his name, that wasn't what people were saying in the press at all. They were kind of really, a lot of, in the British press, a lot of negativity, they couldn't understand why he was doing this. They didn't really know what was going on. And it's interesting now how, you know, he was right. The trouble he had, in a sense, was he was ahead of his time. So it's like, he did it. People didn't really understand that. Now they're like, ah, that's what he was doing. And I think that's interesting, but I think it's a really good mix. And I think Super Cute is just, you know, again, one of those earworm tracks that just, you just play and you just, you know, can't get out of your head. You know, Underneath the Cream works, because that kind of like that third position, that kind of like softer ballady track, kind of in a sense. And it's just, I think Golden Parachute again, oh, I just love it when he sort of, you know, he'll go, this particularly around this era, he'll go on these kind of like, he'd explore these ideas. And that's the thing I really admired about Prince. I think he would explore his philosophy and have his ideas, and he would be very open with them, and kind of, as he was, you know, whether it was God or whether it was politics or whether it was, you know, sex or whatever, he would just come out and he would just explore them openly and honestly. And I just, this is, looking at this, this is, you're right, in a sense, this is very much like the Welcome to America bit. And in a sense, it's, I always love the Welcome to America as well, because of the reason that people thought from the outside, oh, between 2010 and 2014, nothing happened. You know, It's like, it's almost like he wasn't recording anything, and he was, but it's just that we didn't know all the stuff he was doing. But it just, so that really works. But I really think this would be a great call, actually. And you're right to say it's something that most people won't know about, and the artwork's ready to go. So in a sense, you know, the album as Prince envisioned it is there already.
Yeah. They just have to press it and release it.
Yeah. Release it, as we say, the Morris Day, release it. It's so true. It's just, it's there. And that's the thing. I think, you know, we talk about often with big box sets as well, but sometimes there's also a good idea just to release things, it's kind of smaller things, without having to pay, you know, whatever it is, 150, 200 quid or whatever. Actually release certain things that Prince already intended to release, or had, you know, the project was pretty much ready, without it being prohibitively expensive. Because the trouble is, you know, I mean, it's a lot of money for some of these box sets. It's a lot. And it just, you know, I want kind of, you know, the music out there for everybody. And I just worry, because I don't want it to be like some kind of elite thing where, you know, you've got to have hundreds of pounds of just money just flying about just to be able to kind of appreciate these things. But also the artwork, like I say, how easy is that? Because that's done. Steve Park's done that. So you haven't even got you won't be open to the accusations of, oh, this wasn't, you know, what Prince wanted or whatever. It's like, you know, it's there.
The proof is on Prince Vault.
Yes. It's just, oh, I mean, it just terrifies me that anybody else, this would be, you know, just creating this album just on its own would be like, you know, somebody would be really proud. They'd promote it for a couple of years. It'd be out there. And yet for Prince, it was like a project that he made, and a lot of people just don't even know about it.
It's kind of insane to me that he could create such a strong album with this. Yeah. Or if you look at the fact that this album got split into two albums with extra songs, so in a way it's kind of like Sign of the Times in a way. Yeah. If you think about it. But it's insane to me that Prince would create High and the Chocolate Invasion and the Slaughterhouse, scrap all of those songs and say, I'm gonna do a religious album laced with jazz and funk. Like, who makes that turnaround?
I love the idea of Prince just coming in one day going, you know, all the stuff we're working on, right, stop that. We're going to be doing this now. It's mind-blowing how quickly I suppose famously you have Black Album and Love Sexy and I recorded that, but how quickly he can just turn on a dime and just record. I always think of Chaos and Disorder sort of being recorded in this really short period of time, just a few days. And it's just it's just insane how he did that. I don't understand how he did that. And if there's anything else you want to add, you let me know, or we can move on to your very controversial. Another way you're going to put a caveat here, like, you know, like they have those disclaimers, like I don't know, like in gambling adverts, they sort of say terms and conditions apply and whatever. And like, I always think you're going to say, hear me out.
That's basically what's going to happen, but I do have some more stuff that I want to add, which might be controversial, because everyone says, oh, don't mess with Prince's vision. Let me have some fun. Let me play in the sunshine.
it's meant to be fun. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Play in the sunshine.
One thing about High is the possibility of releasing it, and how it kind of ties to Welcome to America and what you were saying about the big box sets being so overwhelming and so expensive. Mm. One of the reasons why I loved Welcome to America coming out was because I'd wanted it since I was 15. Mm. The other reason is because you have these big box sets and these big expensive things, but then you just get Welcome to America that's like 12 songs that the casual fans don't know about. It's an album that's done and ready to go. And it's like £10 for the CD, or you listen to it on Spotify, and it's not overwhelming, and it's not one of those ones like Sign of the Times or Parade with the big legacy behind it with 50 unreleased songs. It's just a new album, and I feel like having those kind of pit stops between the box sets would be good, and High would be a good one for that, because you don't have to spend an arm and a leg. You don't even need to do a big box set for it. I mean, there's probably every single Hit and Run show recorded in the vault because that's what Prince was like. But you don't have to do that. As much as I love the Welcome to America box set because it's so big, expansive, it's got the concert, it's got the album, it's got the vinyl, it's got the reproductions of the paper stuff. If somebody were to slide high into my hands and say, give me 10 quid and that's yours on CD, I'd be like, finally, took you long enough. Let's go.
I love the fact you were waiting for Welcome to America because in 2015, that seemed like an incredibly long shot. You know, it was like in terms of like, especially even when the estate, Welcome to America wasn't something that I kind of thought they were going to go for. And I'm so glad they did because at the time it must have seemed like a kind of like, oh, this will never happen. And you know, I couldn't agree with you more about having something in between, because I think first of all, it can be affordable rather than the big box sets. Also, it means people aren't waiting like the best part of a year or longer between these massive kind of bookend kind of big projects. You can have something which keeps the excitement and also allows people to something new. And also Prince had so much stuff. This is not like we're dealing with an artist that go, oh, well, he's only got 5 unreleased songs. What are we going to do? This is someone who you could release something every sort of other week and you'd still be fine. And so it's kind of, I think it's such an important thing because you could, you know, people can buy it, they can get into it, it creates a buzz. And why not have these in between the bigger box sets? I mean, make the bigger box sets, like I say, you know, however often you make them, but have these projects in between because they're easy wins for the estate. And they help Prince's legacy and they get it out there. And like you say, it shouldn't be, you know, I mean, Prince often, well, you know, like with the Third Eye Girl, you know, he would do a concert for £10, let alone, you know, just have that affordability. Because I just really don't want it to become sort of, my nightmare is like, you know, there'll be the sort of, I don't know, some only elite collectors can afford these and these box sets get bigger and bigger. And that's fine for people who can afford them, but there should also be, you know, accessibility for everybody, because that's key. So I would love that. I would love it if they just said tomorrow, you know, right, we're bringing up High, douche. Because, you know, I mean, this year, well, we don't know what's going to happen, but probably a Purple Rain something because of, you know, the 40th anniversary. But I think, you know, just to have something like this, announce it. And like I say, you don't have to, you could probably do it and say, we're announcing it. And you know what, it's going to be on sale in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Because if it's only £10, then fine. Whatever. Great. I'd love that. I would absolutely love that. I think that's, yeah, very good shout.
To quote Prince, Londell, why should I do that when I could do that?
Yes. And the thing is, it's you know, it makes the estate money. It brings in attention. It gets people talking about Prince, and that's, you know, yeah. I want this now. The trouble is, you made me want this released now, and I'm going to be like, you know, like you were in 2015 with Welcome to America. I'm going to be like this now, going like for the next few years, I'll be like banging the drum, going, come on, release high, free high. I just, the more I look at it now, I actually, yeah, I really do want that album now. Oh, see, now you've made me like, you know, his job is done, he said. Oh, come on. Oh,
a couple of changes that I would make to High, because
hold on, no, I would never hate.
You've expressed some love for songs that I don't really like, so
Vicky,
I'm kind of
Vicky. Yeah? Go on.
I feel like if I were to do it, I would remove Don't Kill Me. I would remove Underneath the Cream and throw in Judas Smile, because that song is incredible.
I can go with that. I don't mind that. I think Underneath the Cream is, it's of that album, it's one of the weaker songs. So I think I would go with, yeah, I'll let you have that. I fully
Judas Smile is one of those songs that is just so Prince. Nobody else could do it.
Yeah.
I would also take out Gamilla and throw in Hypno Paradise, because I think that works really well with Golden Parachute.
Ooh. Do you know what? This is less controversial than I thought. I mean, unless you're about to say that you're going to get rid of my medallion, then I don't know.
Oh, no!
I was worried at that point. I was thinking, oh, God. Vicky's going to say, right, my medallion out. When I lay my hands on you, out.
No, those two are safe. The only change that I would make is get rid of You Are My Sunshine and replace it with Jukebox with a Heartbeat, because that song is, it's a crime that that song isn't on Spotify or on either of the other two albums, because it's kind of got this funk and political commentary on it.
And do you know what, that does actually tie in with the theme of the album. Like, say, with Golden Parachute, that really fits in with that. That kind of, you know, the kind of... I love that song because it's... I always wonder, you know, Prince must have felt like that at times. Just like, you know, like at concerts where sometimes people say, oh, just, you know, they'd want him to play the hits. It was almost like, oh, play this, play that. It was almost like, you know, they wanted certain songs and they didn't... Because I like the fact that Prince would always satisfy people with the hits, but also play... you know, what he was currently working on. I think of the Brits, where he played like Tiamo Corazon and Fury and then played like Purple Rain and Let's Go Crazy. And I think Jukebox with the Heartbeat must be, I just love it because it just feels like, you know, sometimes people just play the hits, do this thing, and they forget this is a creative person. This is someone, you know, who just has this amazing artistry. And I do love that. I didn't realize that, because I didn't realize it wasn't on Spotify, but then thinking about it, I suppose it wouldn't be, would it? Because if it's not really...
It's not on an album. It's just, I think it was released on one of the audio shows. Or maybe not even that. It must have been to be on bootlegs, but it just feels like a crime that... And I also feel like that links in with When Will We Be Paid and would be a nice, funky, but political commentary to end on.
Because this is quite a... you know, an album with opinions, and he's saying something. This is, you know, this is an album where he had something to say, and he'd sort of, you know, been through that kind of, I mean, he's still going through it to an extent, but he's kind of been through that, taking on the record companies and these ideas. And that's actually, you know, a really good show. I mean, it frustrates me because there's so much official stuff still as well, which isn't out there on Spotify. Yeah, you know, I mean, even if it's like, you know, albums he's done for other people or just a few. I mean, I assumed the estate would put everything official out like instantly, like on streaming, just like everything there was, but there's still sort of albums which you know, and related artist albums which still aren't out there, and you think the first thing you've got to do is get out his official stuff, because then you can start to work on all the unofficial stuff, which gets more controversial, I'm sure.
I also want to say that if Prince can finish Musicology with, is it Dear Mr. Man or Reflection? Reflection.
Yeah, those two.
If he can finish Musicology with those two, I also want to say that he could finish high with Jukebox with a Heartbeat.
That's true, actually. I mean, I always think of Dear Mr. Man and that just, that ending, that kind of, you know, we tired, Joel. And it's just that kind of, yeah, actually, that's, do you know, that the weird thing is about this album is how cohesive. I was surprised because, how there's a theme running right through it, and it actually thematically is actually really has a really coherent message. Do you know what, that actually, oh no, now I'm going to want like a high with a kind of like extended, just a few extra track. I want like, I'm going to have to make my own version now. I'm going to have
I've already done that. That was 2 years ago. I'm just
behind it. I'm going to have to play it in that order with Jukebox and Heartbeat at the end. Oh, now I'm going to get fall in love with the album that doesn't exist and I probably won't ever get. Oh, no.
It's okay, because we could. It's like when Sign of the Times was released, everyone was like, finally, we've got, is it the Big Dream Factory?
Yeah.
They exist to an extent because you can make them exist.
Yeah, it's like a sort of like, you know, what do they call it? Like you sort of just pick and play and put it all together and you can make up your own. I love that. It's like build your own Prince album.
Yeah,
take this.
I've done that. Because I love Wendy and Lisa so much, I made a playlist on Spotify called "The Revolution Will Be Heard," and it's just got a load of Wendy and Lisa involved Prince songs. Yeah. And I sent it to my friend Chris Johnson. I don't know if you know.
Yes, I do know the Purple Nights podcast. Yes, indeed.
I sent it to him, and he said to me, "Oh, it feels like an actual album the way that you've sequenced it."
Oh wow. Wow. That's pretty
cool. I'll do that after we're done.
Definitely. Yes. Otherwise, I'll be harassing Chris now. I'll go, right, what? Come on. Where is it? That's it. I'm going to want this album now. Oh, see, I've been waiting now for years for the estate to get round to this.
It's okay, you can build it yourself and just wait and wait and wait.
I'm going to do that. I mean, to be fair, you know, the artwork's there, the song's there. I will build my own version, and then and I say, I'm going to do that. That's my listening sorted out for the week.
Yeah.
Oh, so is there anything else on high you'd like to say about?
No, I think I've spoke to the truth.
Right, excellent. Now, we've got your back here. We've you have our support. You are a fearless soldier going into battle. I'm building this up and making it sound really terrifying, and it's not. Thank God.
Back in the days where I would traverse the org and I'd stumble across a song or some kind of whisper, the org would be the best place to get details if it isn't on Prince Vault. I would say that Prince Vault is the official, the org is the whispers, rumours.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
That's how I divide it. But I can't remember exactly when it was, but I stumbled across a comment on a thread about the song Turn Me Loose by the username is Papa J, and it was posted on the 8th of the 9th, 2009. And he said that Turn Me Loose, dollar money from Lotus Flower, Feel Better, Feel Good, Feel Wonderful, and the internet single Funk, P-Funk, F-U-N-K, was apparently going to be released on a hardcore funk album called Funk around his time playing at Coachella in 2008. And when he performed Turn Me Loose on Jay Leno,
yeah,
the picture behind him was apparently going to be the artwork for it.
Wow. I mean, it was so weird seeing that Turn Me Loose on Leno, because I was like, where did this come from? Usually you wouldn't perform something on such a watch show unless most people wouldn't record it, put it out there, unless it was something that was on an album or was about to be on an album. Or, I mean, Turn Me Loose. So P-Funk, oh my God. I mean, one of my most favorite songs. They always said that if you really want to get a great song, sometimes you have to make Prince angry. And I think that kind of like that Prince Fans United. And it was just hilarious, but funky. It was almost like saying, I can do this just at a drop of a hat. This is, you know, and it's an extraordinary song. So what was it? Can you do this, the track list again, just I'm getting my brain around it.
Turn Me Loose, which was played on Jay Leno on the 25th of April, but it wasn't streamed on the radio until September. And that's quite, that's a few months.
That's a big gap, yeah.
So it must have still been floating around his head for him to play it in April and then give it to the radio in September.
I love the way Prince says that. Any other person would perform on Leno and they'd be like, the new single released tomorrow or something, or the next few days. But Prince, no. It's just, you know.
So there's Turn Me Loose, Money, Dollar. I don't know how to pronounce the name of that song.
No, I don't, but I think you've done it wrong.
It's one of my favourite songs. Feel Better, Feel Good, Feel Wonderful, and Prince Fans United, Funk, F-U-N-K.
Feel Better, Feel Wonderful, I think is... I actually think it's one of my favourite songs. I just absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, you know, the kind of... the brought forth water and the kind of like the bit we plays the guitar, and it just... It's just... I love the line where it's sort of like, you know... That, you know, my fans would sue me, but they love me too much, and it's just brilliant. It's just, I mean, that would be, so it's like a sort of, what would you call it, like a mini album, EP, so almost. Or
I just want to throw out, none of this is confirmed. I did look on Prince Vault, and on one of the pages to do with Lotus Flower or NPR Sound, it has got a note saying that there is a rumored funk album. Nothing's been confirmed. Dogs of Funk and Berry is tied to this a bit with the notes that I've got. You can go and pester him, because I think he knows any of us. But there wasn't like an official full track list. It was just Papa J saying these four songs are rumoured to be on this album with this artwork.
So you know what happened now? The estate will probably release it next week and you'll be completely vindicated. That kind of makes sense, though, because Prince would often, you know, have these projects that he, especially like I say, this is all the sort of around the Coachella time, the kind of.
This so this is about 2008, and it's tied to the way that I see it in my head is you've got Lotus Flower, the album, MPLS Sound, the album, and I feel like if this is real, funk developed into MPLS Sound, but because I am who I am, I have looked on Prince Vault at the track listings for Lotus Flower and MPLS Sound, and there are loads of different track lists from like 2006. Songs for Lotus Flower were recorded in, I think, 2004 with the New Power Trio. And in Old School Company, Prince does the thing where he name checks all the songs from the album. But in Old School Company, he name checks 77 Beverly Park, which I think was taken off of MPL Sound and put on Lotus Flower. So even right up until the last minute, he was having these second guesses about how do I do this album? And if you look at the track lists, 3121 crosses over with them, Planet Earth crosses over with them, and the 3121 movie became the Lotus Flower movie. There's even songs from Deliverance on the track lists that were taken off, changed. Song of the Heart was supposed to be on there at one point. And as much as Prince is a master of doing cohesive albums like High, there's also this really weird point from like 2004 to 2009 where you've got the commercial hits like Musicology, 3121, you've got the groundbreaking thing of Planet Earth being released on a newspaper that completely changed how people count album sales, I think, or that might have been Musicology or both of them. So he was doing this groundbreaking returning to the public stuff, but bubbling away behind was how the hell am I going to do Lotus Flower? And it feels like at any given moment, 2004, 2006, 2007, 2009, he could have released Lotus Flower in like various different configurations. Yeah. And then you've got MPLS Sound or funk that's attached to that. And they all kind of overlap in this weird spiderweb kind of way.
Wow. I mean, I love the fact also you mentioned even Deliverance, which is a weird situation where it sort of came out, but then didn't, but then kind of unofficially, then someone got sued and it all kind of got a bit messy. But you're absolutely right. Because I think with Exodus, I remember somebody was working on Exodus, sort of the history of Exodus, and you see how many times he changes it, adds in little tracks, takes out tracks, and you see configuration after configuration after configuration. And you're right, at any point, I suppose, had he released that album a few months earlier, a few months later, or whatever, it would have been a different configuration. And this is the thing I love about Prince. I've always wanted to know, how does he know when an album's done? Because like you could tinker with it for like and change it forever. And it's almost like, what point do you go, no, this is it. I'm doing another project. But the thing is, Prince didn't do one thing at once, did he? He obviously did like, a million different things. And how he just decided that was the moment it came together. Because I think P-Funk was quite a, because when it came out, it was interesting because he sort of like, it released, it came out and then it became really popular and people loved it. So it's kind of, there's a bit of a push on it. It's like, oh yeah, let's get it out there. Let's kind of like, and God, that makes sense. I mean, it's almost like he had all these tracks and he couldn't find these homes for them. I always think of, I think it's When True in Love, and you think of When True in Love in terms of on the Black Album, Love Sexy, it ended up on like a scandalous maxi single EP. And it's like, it didn't really have a home. It just kept moving about and it didn't really know where it lived. And that's really interesting. Cause I mean, again, though, that's something the estate you could do, and it wouldn't be that difficult to do, really. I mean, you know, you could release it, and you could do that for a pretty decent price. I mean, you could even just put it out on as a sort of thing on a streaming service, like pretty much. Well, today, let's do it today. Do it today. But I mean, you could pretty much do it instantly. It wouldn't take a lot, you know, to do.
It does in this moment feel like a compilation album, but if you transport yourself back to 2008, when you have these internet singles like P-Funk that would crop up, but you also don't have Lotus Flower that's on the shelves in Target. But so many of those songs wouldn't have been released, or there would be ones just floating around. I mean, think of Hit and Run Phase 2, half of that is singles, half of that is stuff that you'd not heard of or you'd heard played or you have on a bootleg from 1982 looking at you Extra Lovable.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's actually really true. That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, you could put that out there and you could just say, look, this is, you know, something that Prince, we think, considered, that he kind of had an idea for, put it out there and just add it to that kind of, you know, list of the creativity of Prince. And to be honest, I want, you know, P-Funk. I just love it. I just, it's just absolute classic Prince. If I want to say, show someone, I mean, they always say that, but how do you, you know, they say, if someone's interested in Prince and they come to you, what do you play them? And it's just impossible because some people say, oh, you need to find out what they're into, like what particular music they like, and then pick a song like that. And there's no one song that kind of represents the whole of Prince. But I think P-Funk is such a Prince track in the sense of it's just so Prince. And that whole kind of, chicken grease, the fun, the sped up voice. It's just, so I love it, the way he does that.
About the sped up voice. Because it feels like this era was kind of a Camille 2.0.
Yeah.
I feel like people are going to come for me. But so I have written my own ideal track list, not in an order, just considering the songs that have come out that were on the track list. No, that were on track lists at the time and just considered what I think would work well together. And in no particular order, I've got Turn Me Loose, Dollar/Money, Feel Better, Feel Good, Feel Wonderful, Funk, Old School Company, Glass Cutter, All A Share Together, the demo of Life of the Party with the sped up voice, The Morning After, I Am, and Song of the Heart. And if you look at these, there's at least three or four or maybe even five songs in there that have the Camille voice. So it feels like there would be that cohesion. Some of them are more aggressive rock, like I want to say Glass Cutter, and from what I remember, P-Funk is kind of funky but hard rocky. And then you've got something like Old School Company, All A Share Together, I Am Extended, just pure
fun. Oh, that is just incredible. And again, that's kind of in that, it's like a limbo, because it's kind of like, it's like, I don't know, it's like, is it, I mean, it's sort of quasi officially, but not really. And now, I mean, that's, and I love the fact you put The Morning After, because again, I mean, that's just, I just wish you'd, I was looking for that years ago online and I couldn't find it anywhere except one guy on YouTube had done like a video, like a funny video of basically him going about his day, getting up in the morning and kind of walking about in the park and whatever, just sort of to The Morning After song. It was almost like it was the only place I could find it. And it was just, so in my mind, it's kind of fused with this guy kind of acting out The Morning After. And it's interesting because, you know, I think Peach and Black mentioned this, that, you know, I just wish you'd put that on there. I just, you know, because it's just sort of, you think, has it, I don't want to get lost, you know, because I think it's just, you know, it's just a brilliant Prince song. And you think, I don't know why, at the last minute or what happened, but he just left it off. And I just wish that was out there. So that would be great.
I feel like The Morning After is like, I Am, this kind of weird limbo thing, because you get the hard copy of Lotus Flower. You've got the cover of Crimson and Clover, which is incredible. And the video is beautiful. But then you get the download and the cover is replaced with The Morning After. And I feel like it totally changes the pace and the vibe of the album, because you go from this really ethereal cover to what I'm guessing is a song about waking up after having sex with somebody.
It's quite interesting because I wonder why he did that, because I wonder if it's like, I remember when I bought Somebody and like each CD would have like a different sort of mix, so you'd have to buy about three or four different versions of the single. I wonder if it's just like this added bonus, but I don't know. I suppose in a sense it's sort of, he liked those little surprises, like you said. I love it when you mentioned Lay Down, and you think what's going. I remember when I put in New Power Soul when I first got it, and it says like something like 49 tracks. Like, there's 49 tracks, there can't be 49 tracks. Of course, there's like this gap until Wasted Kisses, and it's I love the way he did that, but it's I think I am, like say, I just, that whole Deliverance project, I just wish that, I just think the best way to, for the estate to have dealt with that was to say, well, we'll put it out there officially. We'll just put it out there. It's kind of, you know, let's just get it out there. Because otherwise, I don't see the point in kind of like suing someone for not putting it out there, but then not putting it out there yourself. You might as well just put it out there and say, like, we'll, you know, we'll put it out there. We'll get it there. And I listened to some of that and it's just, oh, the guitars, the kind of thing, it just... Yeah, I Am is just extraordinary.
If they were to release Deliverance as an entire thing, I personally would want the Man Opera, I think it's been titled, the like medley of all of them together as one track, but then also the individual full tracks like I Am Extended, Sunrise, Sunset Extended. And I think Deliverance as well as Man Opera were being toyed about around this time to be on an album like Planet Earth or Lotus Flower. So they're very of this era, but it feels like there's the whole Camille sped up voice that connects some of the songs together. But also, and this is extremely nerdy of me and just an example of how far I'll go, at the single cover for Funk, Prince is holding the mic gun. If you look at the album cover that was behind him on Jay Leno, he's holding the mic gun, and that in my head is a connection between
really
Funk and the album and the single. He's holding the mic gun in both of them.
I had never noticed that. Oh my god, that's actually brilliant. Yeah,
so
oh my god,
those two things between the sped up voice and the mic gun that connects this idea in my head of, I'm not saying it was a real thing, but it's kind of weird that there are those Easter eggs connections.
Yeah. I am so going to have to like dig that out now.
I'll send you a photo afterwards because I've got it.
That's crazy. God, it's so weird. But yeah, I just think that, you know, I almost wonder with the Camille voice, with P-Funk, it's almost like he kind of like wanted to get away with saying stuff as well. And it's almost like he kind of used the Camille voice to kind of, you know, I love that bit when he's sort of like, you know, I love all y'all, but don't mess with me no more. It's like that kind of like, that kind of like, he could just get away with certain things, I think, with the Camille voice. And it is just, it was almost like saying, I'm here, I'm listening, but I can still do, I do incredibly funky stuff. But it's like, it was almost, I think when Prince has got a point to prove, sometimes it really works. I mean, I think of Emancipation, when he's sort of like, you know, this is a big project, you know, I'm really... The amount he put into that, I think sometimes with Chaos and Disorder, in a sense of like he just sort of blasted through it. And but sometimes I think when he's got that kind of, I don't know, that almost fire under his belly, that just, you know, just incredible, absolutely incredible.
I've done two episodes of the Purple Nights podcast with Chris, and one of them was around the time that it was announced that Jack White had bought a test pressing of Camille.
Yes.
And as far as I remember, I want to say I was the first person to break that into the community, because I literally took a photo of the sped to Tesco, bought the magazine, took a photo of it, put it on Twitter. My tweet ended up on a Rolling Stone article.
Oh my god.
And Chris was like, okay, we can sit down and do an episode on it. And I can't remember what I said verbatim, but as somebody who really loves psychology and Prince and delving into this stuff as deep as I can get to the core, I remember basically saying that it felt like Camille was built as an alter ego to say stuff that Prince couldn't, or explore things that Prince couldn't. And it felt like when I was researching, reviewing and speaking about the Camille album, it felt like I was psychoanalyzing him and his relationship at the time, and how Camille was kind of like a veil to Prince at the time with Susanna and everything that was going on. So I totally agree with you saying that the sped up voice is kind of like a way that he can say stuff that he can't say.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's just, I love that way Prince did that. I mean, even with I suppose back in the day of like when he wrote for The Time, he kind of got some songs that he would almost, you notice when Morris Day wasn't there, that he would almost have to do those tracks himself, like with Pretty Man. He'd have to kind of like, he'd have to go into the Morris Day character and do it himself. And I think that was the way Prince could do these different parts of himself. And I that was an incredible story. I mean, I remember that was huge. I can't believe Rolling Stone and everything. That's crazy. I mean, it was mad because Jack White was very much like, you know, I've bought this. This is, you know, he was very confident he could get it out. And it was just, where is it? I mean, it was just sort of, yeah, it was just, it was very, I mean, it was weird because he paid, you know, a decent amount, didn't he?
For I want to say $15,600 off the top of my head.
Wow, that's very precise. I'm just
like that.
I just love that because and the thing is, he was really enthusiastic about it, wasn't he? He was really, I love that because I think there was a, I'm sure there was a, yeah, there was lots of quotes at the time. It was really a lot of controversy. And like I say, I'm trying to think how long ago that was now. That was...
I want to say that was around the time of Welcome to America, just after.
Yeah.
I kind of have... Jack White is another one of my musical inspirations. Mm. And he's the reason I have stacks of vinyl, because he's like the Willy Wonka of vinyl with everything that he does. But when I heard that Jack had bought the copy, I felt like there's a lot of love and trust to him because of how passionate he is about music, how he's trying to keep the vinyl revival going and helping people like Billie Eilish do exclusives. And then on the other side of that, you've got Jack White buying original copies of Elvis's first single that he would reproduce and put out so people can listen to Elvis's first single. And I am not an Elvis fan, but as soon as I heard that Camille had been bought by Jack White, I immediately went, okay, this is going to be the Prince version of the Elvis single, because Jack White owns the master, but he would surely, hopefully, reproduce it and sell it at an affordable price for people to get their hands on, to finally have another Prince thing done by somebody with care. And the Sign of the Times exclusive singles box set was done through Third Man Pressing, so they have that rapport already.
I mean, that's the thing, the passion he has for it and the care. There's a quote where I think there was a quote, I was doing a video about Batman, and there was a quote where Prince had actually said to Jack White about his song, and he said, you know, he said to Jack White, well, I really like your song, the George James Bond song. And he said, and Jack White said, you know, oh, well, you know, I got some criticism for that. And he's like, no, I thought it was real strong. I love that. That's the thing with passion, because all these things, if you can do them with passion. I remember there was a version of Sign of the Times that came out, the kind of DVD. It was official, but it was not through the estate, if that makes sense. It was Peach and Black were on it, and various.
The big box set, that's like four discs.
Yeah. And it was just, there was just a lot of passion in it. And it was kind of like, it was that thing where I just think, like I say, Jack White would be ideal, because you want someone who really deeply cares about, you know, the importance of it, and someone who really understands it, and really, you know, I think that's all we can hope for with the Prince. I used to get kind of a bit, I don't know, I made the mistake of thinking the estate was the only kind of way these things, I mean, to a certain extent, some of these things are only going to happen through the estate because they've got them in the vault. But I think the estate is, like I say, everybody. It's you coming on here and talking about these unreleased albums. It's about talking about these things that there's so much more to Prince, and kind of furthering that, because, first of all, I don't want Prince to be reduced to kind of like, some people think he sort of basically had a career of like, 83 to 86 or something. It's just like, it's just kind of like that minimum thing. And I think also just to show how creative he was and how much depth there was, because I listen to live stuff and various other things every day, and I think, oh my god, I haven't heard that, or that's brilliant. And I think, I feel like after all this time, I've still only scratched the surface. And today, you've actually made me feel, like, in a good way, more like that, because I think, oh my god, there's still new things that, like, I hadn't heard of this project at all with funk. And I kind of like, and I thought, first you think, oh my god, have I, you know, what? And it's like, it's wonderful, because it's actually a brilliant thing, and the connection with the gun microphone, and just, I just love that, because it's like, if you'd have told me at 14 when I got into Prince, you'd still be learning new things now, I'd be like, there's no way. I've had that people I know who have said about talking about Prince, they go, well, haven't you, after a little bit, said everything there is to say? I was like, no. That's not going to happen. It's, you know, I'm so lucky that I got into someone. I could have got into someone who just, you know, did one album, disappeared, retired, never did anything else. And I just was so lucky that he connected that moment. Because if you'd have said to me all these years later, and one of the great things is, you know, meeting people. I mean, I never would have met you without Prince. And yeah, just to kind of, you know, it's just incredible. I mean, just the way he sort of still brings people all together, and still, and it's just, it's an incredible community. And it just feels, you know, it's also, this sounds a bit weird, but it's just the only community I feel like I really do belong, you know. And it's weird because I don't have anything else like that. And it's just been an incredible journey. And I've just been, you know, so privileged to, I mean, it's weird to be able to talk to people who know so much about it. And that's what terrifies me, in a sense, in a brilliant way, is that almost no one's like just a bit into Prince. Like the people I know, they know incredible amounts. And it's like, I just love it, because I feel like I'm kind of like at a brilliant kind of, what's the word, like a course or university course that I love and I'm really interested in, and I get it for free. And it just feels like, you know, it's just, I just can't thank you. And I can't believe how much I've talked. So I think this is an hour and a half, so I'm terrible. This is the thing, you know, I thought, oh, you know, I'll start talking. I won't be too long. I won't get distracted and go off into different rabbit holes, but it's just impossible not to. I should wrap up, I guess. I just want to say, first of all, thank you, because this has been incredible. I mean, I feel like, you know, you've got to come back on. Definitely. You've got to come back. I mean, I'm sure.
I have so many more things to talk about. And if you want to give me a platform, I will take it.
I would love it. Seriously. I mean, there's always, like you say, so many things going on in the Prince world. I'd love to get your view on. And also just, I like the fact that also you can come on and surprise me with stuff I didn't know, because that is brilliant. Because it's like, anything I can think of is going on in the Prince world is interesting to talk about, but also just stuff I had no idea about. I mean, this is just already, I'm kind of, I want high in my hand, first of all, now. And second of all, I kind of want, you know, I want funk now. I just, I'm going to, that's it. I'm making a high version. I will be putting that on today. And I want to thank you also for what you do. I'm going to put a link in the podcast notes about also your TikTok video, because I just, it's emotional. And I just, I was just moist-eyed, put it that way. I was like, it's one of the most powerful. And people say, oh, it's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's open and brave, but it's also just, it's what music should be, you know, because that's the whole point. It just connects to, it makes you feel, I've had times when, you know, there's a Prince song for everything. There's a kind of,
yeah, whatever, there is.
You're feeling, you know, you can feel, sometimes I feel, oh, down, and you play a Prince song, you get up, you dance in the house or whatever, and you feel this is great. And then sometimes you just want some beautiful ballad, or there's always something. And I just think, you know, you just, the connection with Third Eye Girl as well, just, I just love it, because I don't hear them talked about enough. I don't. I know the Revolution.
Can I just, you know, throw something in?
Of course you can, always.
I did write on my blog a couple of years ago a massive thing about Third Eye Girl and like that era that goes through the internet releases, the live releases, stuff that ended up on later albums like Groovy Potential. Ooh. And I kind of touch on the Piano and a Microphone 3 singles. I think there were 3 of them. And it's a big read. It's like half an hour long to read. But that is like my love and dedication for Third Eye Girl, because I mean, I didn't say everything, but it's quite lengthy. So I can send you the link to that. If
definitely.
You want.
Yes, I'll put that in the notes. Definitely. That'd be brilliant. Is there anywhere else people can connect with you on online?
I always say that my hub is Instagram. I love Instagram. My username is Vicky Exley. And that Instagram is basically just a digital portfolio of what I'm doing, what I've been doing, trying to be as active and supportive as I can to all the different minority communities, because I, as well as spreading the love for Prince and Doctor Who and doing my own creative stuff, I also want to try and be a voice for people who don't have a voice.
Wow. I mean, wow. I gotta say thank you. The first time I met you, you just just incredible. You're just so welcome and opening. And also it's interesting to see how, you know, just the way you talk about everything, just with an intelligence and a kind of passion, but also just, I don't know, it just, you just connect, you know, with people. And I can't wait to see, you know, all the stuff you're going to go on to do. It's just incredible. And it's also bizarre how you are way more mature than I was when I was your age. It's insane. It's just like, you really are. I mean, honestly, I mean, seriously, I was like, I'm just, you know, in awe. So I just want to say thank you from the bottom.
I want to say thank you to you because you've just been nice and supportive and kind and welcoming and warm. And you're just great. And I hate that we don't talk more often, and I would love to do more of this.
Oh, well, we're definitely going to get you back because, oh my God, there's so many more things. And now, like, even more things that I didn't know. It's like, I think it's that thing, that famous quote, there's like, you know, unknown unknowns. I didn't even know about this project. And now it's just like, I love the fact you've taught me a new thing. This has like made my day. So thank you so much.
And you're welcome.
I'm going to get you back on for like, oh, I'll be bothering you. Don't worry.
I will do as many as I can.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. And I'll put all those links in the podcast, and just, oh, it's been absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.